Now to just pop over and see what's going on Cube Twitter. Everybody, welcome to your lucky paper for the week. My name is Andy. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Anthony. Better have his Scryfall fingers warmed up, Maddox.
I sure do. Got Scryfall open. Look, I can prove it.
I don't doubt.
There it is.
I feel like if you're in this basement, 9 times out of 10, you've got Scryfall on your laptop.
Yeah, I had to stop at home. The laptop's mostly here for emotional defense. But
it's there so you don't have to stare at me while you're talking. It's like something else to look at because it's weird to be sitting in a basement just staring at someone's eyes, having
a
conversation.
Sorry, I'll just stare at you in your eyes.
No, I am not saying you should.
You say looking at your computer screen.
I'm not saying you should. I'm excited about the concept for this episode, which, honestly, it feels like a thing that maybe we could have or should have done many times before, and I think might become a style of episode we return to in the future, Anthony. We have talked a lot about our approach to cube design on prior episodes, and one particular approach that I have especially espoused is the idea of just starting with cards you enjoy that you want to play with and using those as like the little seed crystal to then grow into a whole cube. Like start from that nucleation point and then just kind of move out in layers until you've got the beginnings of a cube list.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just it's the best way to start a cube in my opinion, because that is the thing that most people have, is they have a card that they really love, and it can be really intimidating to think about. I need 360 cards that are all in perfect balance and perfect harmony, and it's like, don't worry about that. Start with what's actually exciting to you, and that's probably some particular card that you 3-0'd your first draft with that you really want to be able to play again in a cool context.
Yeah. It's also, I think, just the most fun way to do it. I mean, some people, I think, really enjoy the over-planning of, like, let me lay out all of my archetypes and, like, plan everything from, like, a spreadsheet context first, but for most people, I don't think that's the most fun way to do it. The most fun way is to, like, actually get your hands dirty and think about the magic cards themselves and start...
Please don't get your hands dirty before you touch the clean cards.
That's true. Okay. Get your hands clean. Wash your hands before touching exactly. The sleeves, because we don't want to have to replace these sleeves in 3 months. Wash your hands and then get your hands in those cards and start thinking about how they interact with one another and how you can combine them in new and exciting ways. I mean, that's a big part of why we all enjoy Magic, is just the idea of drafting a cool deck, combining cool cards, and I think it's a very natural way to think about building a cube. So here's what I want to do. I put out a question on the Discord and on Twitter. I just asked people, what are some cool cards that you have wanted to play in a cube list but haven't been able to design a cube around, or haven't been able to find an environment that they fit in before? I got a bunch of answers, and the first one that jumped out at me is JP Licks on the MTG Cube Talk Discord said Trade Routes. This is a card that is played in your Turbo Cube. So you could answer this question the first way by just saying, simply change the rules of Magic, and then Trade Routes is a very playable card.
Get out the Sharpie. I mean, a lot of people will say sincerely, you want to make that card playable? Bust out the Sharpie and, do a little editing.
That is one way to do it, but I want to go the other way and just say, let's...
Context matters. Let's focus on the context.
Let's stick to the rules of Magic, so no changing the rules. Let's also stick to common assumptions around what a cube is. So let's stay singleton. Let's aim for, a cube that can support 8 drafters eventually. And I just want to talk about how we could, using our method that we espouse so much, start at Trade Routes and end up at essentially a cube. This is my plan for the episode, and I think it's just a great way for us to practice what we preach. You know, I mean, it's easy for us to describe the process for how people should do this, but in some ways, I think just demonstrating it is going to be so much more clear to people to actually get them to that point. And if this goes well, I think we can do this many more times with other cards in the future, because, like I said, this is a very fun and easy process. I spent maybe 30 minutes this morning just, like, taking some notes down, and it's fun. I kind of wanted to start building this cube myself, and I'm hoping somebody listening will actually want to do this, because there's a lot of really cool directions this goes very naturally and immediately. So I have a list. Please jump in at any point, because I'm sure you're going to be live Scryfalling. This is all new to you. You do not have any pre-knowledge of this episode topic. So jump in at any point, interrupt me, and insert yourself if you have any other ideas. But the first thing I do when I have a card I want to use as a, like, nucleation point for a cube, and maybe it's important to,
first thing, get help. Read up on it.
Garaba. I think it's important to maybe clarify what I mean by this. Like, I don't want this to end up being the trade routes cube, right? Where trade routes is the best card. It's the only thing that matters. Every single card in the cube has to do with trade routes. I'm just using this as a starting point to say that this is a card I want to be able to play. And from there, I want to, like, see what a cube could look like around it. And I'm sure there are lots of different kinds of cubes you could build that would make trade routes playable in a variety of different ways. And this is all just the stuff that came first to mind to me. So this is not at all going to be comprehensive, but these are the things that just naturally came to mind. And then I did a little bit of Scryfall searching to find some other things that kind of carried on from that. Let's just demonstrate how this goes. So the first thing I did was think, all right, trade routes is a pretty unique card.
Read trade routes.
Let's read the rules text. It is one in a blue for an enchantment that has two activated abilities. The first is pay one mana, return target land you control to its owner's hand. The second is pay one mana and discard a land card to draw a card. So on its face, this is a very dirtily, non-board affecting enchantment that just lets you move lands between play and your hand and the graveyard, and draw some cards if you want to get rid of lands in your hand. It effectively gives all lands cycling one. It's not actually cycling for things that trigger on cycling, but it gives all lands in your deck cycling one, and then you can also bounce lands to your hand if you ever want to just turn them into cards in the future. It's a very interesting kind of like long late game value engine in the right context. So the first thing I do when I look at trade routes is think, okay, this is a pretty unique card. If I want a cube where this is playable, I should try and find some cards that are like somewhat redundant with trade routes, right? Because if it's the only card that does anything like this, then it's going to be hard to find cards that work with it, but also work with other cards in a broader context. And I'm sure you could find other cards that are redundant with trade routes in other similar ways, but the first two I thought of, the first is Tectonic Reformation. This is one in red for an enchantment that gives each land card in your hand cycling for a red mana, and it itself has cycling too. So this essentially has like one half of trade routes, just the discard a land card to draw a card half of trade routes. It doesn't have the bouncing lands part of trade routes. The other card I thought of for redundancy is more about the bouncing side, and that's Temeshi, Reality Architect. There's a lot of rules text in this one. Stay with me here. This is two and a blue for a 2/3 legendary creature, Moonfolk Wizard. Whenever one or more non-creature permanents are returned to your hand, draw a card. This ability triggers only once each turn, and you can pay X and a white and return a land you control to its owner's hand to return target artifact or enchantment with converted value X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate only as a sorcery. So Temeshi both has synergy with trade routes in that if you are activating trade routes to return a land to your hand, that will trigger Temeshi's ability and let you draw an additional card the first time you do it each turn. It also is another card that can bounce lands from play to your hand, which means that that's one more card that does that, which means you can start to think about building around that sort of effect. Are you with me so far?
I'm with you.
We're going to cover a lot of individual cards here, and it's going to get way too overwhelming if we read all the card text for all of them. So we do this for every episode, but I really want to highlight our cards mentioned page for this episode specifically. So if you go to luckypaper.co/podcast/182/cards, or check the link in the show notes wherever you're listening to this episode, there will be a page that has all of these cards we're going to mention in chronological order. So if you don't know any of the rules text of them, you can follow along there, because we just can't read all this rules text. It's going to be way too overwhelming. So now we've got trade routes, we've got Temeshi, we've got Tectonic Reformation. These are all doing a similar effect. And then the next question I ask myself is, what are cards that have what I'm going to call first order synergy with those effects? So just cards that are synergistic with trade routes, Temeshi, Tectonic Reformation. This is the order I happen to think of these in. It's kind of a weird order. I'm not sure why they came to me in this order, but they did. The first thing I thought of was Baron Tellurian Archmage. This is that mana war that also draws you a card at end of turn if you bounce something you control to your hand. So this is essentially a like weird mana war that also has some synergy if you're bouncing your own stuff, which again, trade routes and Temeshi work with that.
Okay, so just to be clear, you're looking at this trade routes and you're like, okay, what does this do? How do we make cards care about it? And one of the things it does that's very unique is it just lets you return permanents to your hand. So there's going to be a pretty short list of cards that specifically care about cards going back into your hand in a very explicit way.
Yeah. And this is, I think, the easiest part. This is kind of like building a deck. Like, just imagine you have trade routes in your draft pool. What cards do you want to see in the pack to, like, make your deck good? And we're going to go further from this because building a cube is not like building a deck, right? Part of it is. And we're at the sort of like deck building portion part of building a cube. And so we're just looking for like, what are some raw synergies that work with trade routes?
I mean, honestly, this is kind of the one of the really fun things about cube design is when you're building a deck, you want to make sure everything works and makes sense because you want your deck to not just sit there and spin its wheels. When you're building a cube, you can kind of just be like, hey, here's 40 cards that kind of deal with the same thing. I'm just going to put them over here and make it someone else's problem to figure out if and how they actually fit together in a final form.
Yeah, it's true. You get to, I think, be a little more free. And I should say, at this point, I'm thinking 0% about color balance, curve, like anything about like the overall shape of the cube. I am just purely thinking about what are some cards that work in this space that we can start to connect together. So we have Baron, Talarian Archmage. The next card I thought of was Life from Elome. This is a card I love, and it obviously has a ton of synergy with discarding lands for value. I mean, just Life from Elome and Trade Routes in any deck is a pretty good value engine. Now, obviously, you would need the deck to also care about those cards if you didn't draw both of them, right? If you only drew one of them. But imagining having those two cards in play, that's an incredibly powerful late-game value engine that is particularly exciting to me. So Life from Elome is the next one that occurred to me. Then I thought about all of the modal double-faced lands, because those are cards you can play early in the game as lands, and if you have trade routes in play, if and when you ever want to draw that spell, you can just turn that land back into the spell that's on the backside of it. So your Emiria's Calls, your Glasspool Mimics, your Seagate Restorations. I mean, there's like dozens of these at this point that have a land on one side and a spell on the other side, and you can just play them as lands, and they take up a land slot in your deck, and then your trade routes, or Temeshi or whatever, can, in the late game, turn that card into a spell, which is a really cool little small synergy that can pop up.
Just to be clear, you can't cycle those cards, right? Because the land is on the back face?
Yes. So you would return it to your land with trade routes, and when it got back to your hand, it would become the Sorcery Emiria's Call or the creature Glasspool Mimic. It would not be a land in your hand. However, the channel lands are very similar and would be a land in your hand. And similarly, you could play the channel lands, Iganjo, the Seat of the Empire, Odawara, Soaring City. You could play those as lands in the early game and again pick them up whenever you wanted their spell effect, which is kind of cool. I mean, in most contexts, when you're playing Odawara or Iganjo, you're kind of like saving that and you're hoping you're going to draw lands instead. And you use that as your like last ditch land drop if you don't have other lands to play because you want to get the spell effect. And thinking of a context where you have enough ways in your deck to pick them up that you can just play them out early and use them as lands and then pick them up when you need them is a different kind of texture to playing with those cards.
I don't know if this is worth pointing out yet, but sort of something that I'm going to want to think about eventually is all these interactions are very cool. And if you have trade routes in play just for free, let's say it's just, you know, this is the state of the game, you got trade routes in play, you have these lands to do these things. There's a lot of cool interactions there, interesting gameplay that can happen. That isn't necessarily yet maybe a reason to play trade routes, because when you cast it, you're still down a card for the reward of that flexibility. So something I want to eventually be thinking about is just sort of the context and what that actual payoff represents and what value proposition that's making to your players that are going to be drafting it.
Yeah, we will get there, I'm sure. Then the next sort of first order synergy that occurred to me is just anything that lets you play lands from your graveyard. Any Crucible of Worlds effect just turns trade routes into free card advantage.
Now that is powerful.
You could also do like a Splendid Reclamation thing. That's the card that brings all of your lands from your graveyard back
turn
to play.
Turn this into a sort of two-card huge ramp combo.
It's also really cool that trade routes specifically will dig for Splendid Reclamation. Like you can just keep turning all of your lands over into more cards to find your Splendid Reclamation in your deck and then turn into a big ramp effect.
I'm imagining even like a deck that's just playing 22 lands or something just because
you can play
can
a lot
cycle
of lands.
Them all.
Yeah, as long as you've...
If you can find the trade routes.
I was going to say, yeah, at some point you have to decide, and I didn't actually cover like tutors here, but that's mm-hmm. an obvious thing where like if the cube ends up in a place where it is so synergistic and so almost combo-oriented, then you might want to start looking at ways to tutor these cards up. And we don't have to tell you about cards, tutor, trade routes. You can just look at Scryfall for that if you need to figure out what that is.
But, I mean, you can already start seeing that we've got these sort of tutors, we got redundant effects that also let you do other things, and then you're talking about all these lands that have other effects that you might want to play, but then use a channel ability on the lands, or it's a double-faced land that you can do something else with, that maybe all that kind of hangs together in a nice space where there are other reasons to also play a very land-heavy deck that fits together into a little bit of a strategy that doesn't rely on exactly having trade routes all the time.
Yep. A more specific one that works really cool with trade routes is Slowgurk the Overslime. This just is a 3-3 trample for 3 that, among other things, gets a +1/+1 counter whenever a land is put into your graveyard from anywhere. So you can just add instant speed, activate trade routes n number of times, and have the threat of activation of making Slowgurk much bigger, which is pretty slick. I also think trade routes, in a different way, is very cool with landfall, because it essentially guarantees even if you don't draw a land for turn, you will always have access to landfall every single turn for the rest of the game. because you can always just pick up your land and replay it. And that may sound like it costs mana, but it actually kind of doesn't, because if you weren't going to hit your land drop anyway, let's say you have four lands in play, you can tap one and pick that land up to activate trade routes and then just replay it. Now you still have access to your same four mana, so your sort of one mana investment to re-trigger landfall was kind of free. So anything that cares about landfall, I think, does get a little better with trade routes, and that's a much broader bucket, obviously, than something as specific as Slowgurk.
I mean, I'm just going to end up putting trade routes in every cube after this conversation, because I'm like, oh, it's so cool that if I just need, you know, double black on this turn and I only have one swamp,
exactly,
I'll tap my swamp, tap something else to pick up the swamp, play it as my land for turn, and
yep,
that's cool.
I mean,
is that what you're supposed to do with it?
Trade routes is a really cool card. I mean, I picked this one from the ones I saw offered up as ones people wanted to see in a cube, because it was one that I had not played in a cube except for the Turbo Cube. We'll put that aside, because the Turbo Cube is a very unique environment. But other than that, I don't think I've ever played a cube, at least certainly myself, where I've had trade routes in my deck and felt like it did a thing. It's a card where I wasn't immediately like, well, of course it goes in this kind of cube, right? Like, I saw some people suggest cards that it's like, I've played this card a million times in cubes. Like, this may not fit in your specific cube that you play, but this is a very sort of relatively easy card to build around. So I picked it for that reason. I also picked it because it does make you ask questions around like how this card could be good. Like, it's kind of interesting, it's kind of inspiring. So it is why I picked this card specifically. Kind of similar to that landfall thing, I think exploration effects are actually pretty good with trade routes as a baseline. Just being able to move lands between multiple zones more than one time a turn, I think, takes all of these potential synergies and like turns them up a notch, right? Exploration plus trade routes is 2x landfall for no mana, I say in big air quotes, because you are tapping the lands to pick them up to then replay them every single turn, which means that your landfall stuff is going to go totally crazy.
Right, so the bonus of the landfall interaction is, if you don't have other lands to play, trade routes gives you an option, but if you have exploration in play, you're almost certainly not full of a bunch of extra lands. This is definitely going to just really start doing work at that point.
Yeah, and I feel like exploration effects, very often you end up in a situation where they're good for like a turn, and then you're mm-hmm. like, well, now I'm just never going to have more than one land in my hand for the rest of the game. So they did their thing and now it's kind of over. And them in combination with the trade routes means whatever the thing is they're doing, they can kind of keep doing as the game goes on. Now, we're going to get to these bigger questions as we go, but given all the synergies with landfall, I'm starting to think, okay, I mean, trade routes on its face is a very like dirtily card, like I said, which means that if there's a cube where this is playable, I think one of my important questions to answer is, like, what does aggro look like? And
yeah, I guess, do you want the whole cube to be leaning into this kind of
pace? No.
Or do you want to add some contrast in here? Maybe this is too early to ask those kinds of questions, but...
No, I don't think it's too early to ask those kinds of questions. When I build a cube like this, it's not that I'm actually building a whole cube around trade routes. Usually it's actually that I have, like, 3 to 7 cards that I do this exact same exercise for and find the overlap. So we're doing
Maybe you do this for 10, and then you like look at those constellations and find
exactly.
3 of those constellations that slot together in an interesting way.
Yeah. So, no, the entire cube should not be about trade routes at all. Like, ideally, when we're done, no one should look at the cube and be able to figure out what the initial card that started this whole thing was, because everything will be so interconnected that it will just be one of the cards that is playable in the environment. But I do want to know what aggro looks like, and because trade routes is so good with landfall, I'm starting to wonder if the aggro deck could be a like Steplinks, Akum, Hellhound, landfall style aggro deck, which is something I'm just putting in the back of my mind. Like, okay, interesting. That's like the first of all these synergies, that's the first one that actually starts to maybe lean a little aggro.
Actually,
which
can win a game.
I mean, you could win a game in these other ways,
but... You could win a great game with Life from the Loam, somehow.
You can simply win the game by casting Emiria's Call, so you could win the game in a lot of ways so far.
Sure, good point.
So I'm taking note of that. Like, Steplinks, Akum, Hellhound may be interesting to think about. If there's a bunch of cards in this cube that work with landfall, work with trade routes, work with these kind of broad synergies we're defining, then it's not that trade routes will be in your aggro deck, necessarily, though maybe it could be, which could be very cool. It's more that all the cards that work with trade routes can also work in the aggro deck, which means
right.
you start to have all this overlap.
And those overlaps can be pretty indirect. Like, Iganjo is a land or a spell. That just gives you a lot more flexibility for an aggro landfall deck.
For sure. Then I thought of Drakehaven, a very specific card that just, whenever you discard a card, you get to pay one to make a Drake. Drakehaven and trade routes is fantastic. You just get to turn all of your lands into Drakes and more cards. It's just a really strong little interaction. And Drakehaven itself is the kind of build around that you could put at the center of a whole cube like we're doing right now with trade routes. So that one occurred to me. It's also in the same colors. It's also a nice little curve. Trade routes into Drakehaven into bury you in Drakes.
They're also both enchantments, so maybe in these intersecting constellations, you might see another enchantment theme somewhere and find a
yep.
little bridge there.
Then because of Drakehaven, I was like, wait a minute, there are a lot of cards that trigger when you discard a card. And I thought of Inti Seneschal of the Sun, mm-hmm. Containment Construct, Currency Converter. And I also got the first black cards I thought of, which were Archfiend of Ifnir and Bone Miser.
Okay, so you just named all of the cards that I opened up.
These are the cards that just, I mean, I think you and I are probably going to have a lot of similar context for thinking of cards. But then I saw Bone Miser and I was like, wait a minute, Bone Miser can kind of go infinite with trade routes? With maybe like one or two other pieces, because Bone Miser, among other things, says whenever you discard a land card, you add black to your mana pool, which is enough mana
if your deck
to
is
pick
all
up a land
lands,
and discard a land.
Bone Miser trade routes Thassa's Oracle. It's never been done.
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you can start thinking about. Like,
I hope you have two blue mana left at the end of all this.
Yeah, I mean, Bone Miser and trade routes is very cool, and obviously we're not doing any editing at this point. We're just putting all the stuff in place that looks cool. Maybe it turns out that in this eventual cube, the Bone Miser trade routes combo is too combo oriented. We want this to be more of a like back and forth fair environment, so we decided to exclude Bone Miser. But right now we're just dumping stuff in a big pile. We're throwing a bunch of spaghetti at the wall, and then we're going to go through and see what kind of spaghetti stuck later on.
Yeah, Containment Construct is really cool here, and it's just going to be a very flexible card that's going to take advantage of anything that lets you discard things. So the way I was looking at these cards is I just did a little Scryfall search for whenever .star you .star discard with the regular expression search, which you can check out our article on how to actually do the details of that. But basically what this is saying is whenever we have whenever you discard in any order with any cards in between, which is important because you might have a card that says whenever you cycle or discard or things like that. There can just be other conditions there. Whenever you discard, a land card might be in there. So it just gives you a broader search, which is really, really powerful and turns up a lot of these cards that have potential interactions.
And this is the joy of Cube. And it's a lot of the same joy that comes from Commander. I bet people have done Bone Miser trade routes in Commander in some obscure deck. I'm not sure which one. But this is the kind of stuff that you're never going to do this in any kind of constructed format. You're never going to do this in any other kind of limited format. So this is the place for these kinds of interactions to live. And this part, I think, we're still in the really easy part, right? You're just naming cards that you think are cool with the other card. I will add that maybe you're listening to this and you're thinking, this is all well and good, but I never would have thought of any of those cards. I just don't have the context that you, Anthony, and Andy have of having played a bunch of cubes and played Magic for a decade or whatever. So Scryfall is a great resource, and we do have multiple articles on our website about how to improve your Scryfall searches. So you can just throw a couple keywords in there and find cards like Anthony's mentioning. I'll also say that you can use EDHREC and just go to their card page and go to highly synergistic cards with that card, and it will show you cards that work well with that card in a Commander context, which may or may not be appropriate for a drafted cube, but you can evaluate that, right? You're just looking for inspiration at this point.
Right.
So it's not like you're going to go and copy and paste that whole list. You're just going to go use that as a list to read to then maybe find cards that you actually enjoy on a personal level. There's also, a lot of people don't know this, or I don't see it talked about a lot, there's also a very similar page on Cube Cobra. You can go on Cube Cobra, go to a card page, and there are three tabs. There is cards that are often played in decks with this card, cards that are often included in cube lists with this card, and cards that are synergistic with this card. I'm not actually sure how they do that third one. Maybe it's part of that Ryan Sachs machine learning special sauce, but these tabs are also just a great place to look for other cards that are helpful. Now, like, those first two tabs, in my experience, are a lot of just generically good cards in the same color, right? Because generically good cards end up in a lot of decks of that color. And so, yeah, Trade Routes is often played alongside Counterspell or whatever because it's a very popular cube card and it's generically good and it's in blue. So those are not always the most helpful, but it's just more places for you to look for inspiration if you don't have this library of knowledge to draw on that Anthony and I do. And some of you listening probably have a much deeper library of knowledge to draw on than Anthony and I.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like, I did the Scryfall search, and then I'm looking at, we got 143 cards, so it's not an insurmountable amount of stuff to read, but definitely a third of these are cards printed in the last 2 years, which I'm just much less familiar with, and that's fine. I'll read them later.
So that's where I stopped thinking of first-order synergy. We could do this all day. We could just keep thinking of first-order synergies.
Yeah, I mean, let's do a couple more. I mean,
okay, what do you got?
We got Bag of Holding, obviously. That's a classic. Discard all your lands into the bag and then draw a bunch of extra cards. Mm-hmm. Again, we're going to have to think about power levels later on and be like, is Drakehaven and Bag of Holding really on the same level that these are both reasons to be in the same deck? Maybe not. Did you mention Faith of the Devoted? This is another one from Amonkhet.
I did not.
That just lets you drain your opponent. So this could be just another win condition for cycling a lot. And I like this because it does still interact with all the cards that you might want to cycle and then cast from exile still get triggered. So there's a lot of opportunity there to turn your cycling into a win condition. Riel the Everwise is another cool one that's just going to be a draw engine whenever you discard cards. So again, fits in with all the other kinds of discard synergies.
Yeah, and I'm sure you out there listening have also thought of 10 cards we didn't mention. And this is, again, the easy part of this. Just name cards that are cool that work with this card. Now let's go to the second step.
And okay.
With every step, we're going to go a little further from just like building a deck and a little closer to building a cube. And this second step is looking at second order synergies. So here are the cards that work with trade routes. Let's now look at cards that work with the cards that work with trade routes. So now we're going to be naming cards that probably don't themselves work with trade routes, but they work with cards that we just named. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Is that too confusing to follow?
If we just look at anything with Madness, if it's not a land, it doesn't directly work with trade routes because you can't discard non-land cards with trade routes.
Right.
But it works in the sense that all, like, let's say a good half to three quarters of the cards that we just mentioned will also work with those Madness cards. So, yeah, it's sort of like second cousin in terms of synergy.
Exactly, yeah. I just picture like a bullseye. We have, right in the middle, we have trade routes. We just did the first ring around trade routes. These are all cards that directly relate to it. Now we're going to go one ring out on that bullseye and just look at cards that work with the cards that work with trade routes. And here, I think you as a cube designer can start to say, look at the cards that you just named that are interesting to you. So if you're more interested in Slowgurk or Steplinks or Crucible of Worlds, look at those cards. The ones I chose to look at are Temeshi and Baron specifically, and we'll see where we go from there. So Temeshi, I read the full rules text earlier. It's a little complicated, so again, if you don't know this card, check out the cards mentioned page, but it works really well with cheap artifacts and enchantments that you can sacrifice. So the seal cycle, like Seal of Cleansing, Seal of Removal, Seal of Fire. These cards are really good with Temeshi because they are cheap enchantments that you can sacrifice for a spell-like effect, and then Temeshi lets you rebuy them. So I thought of those to go with Temeshi. Now we're also getting just a bunch of enchantments where an Enchantress package starts to make more sense. Can we actually play, you know, an Enchantress itself? Do we have an Enchantments Matter theme going on? I'm not sure. The baubles also work really well with Emry, so I'm already going to like sneak a little third level synergy in here, right? Like Emry and Temeshi are kind of like a pair in my head where they do a very similar thing. Interestingly, they do a very similar thing in a way that Emry has nothing to do with trade routes in any way, right? I mean, I guess, no way. I can't think of any way they have any synergy.
Well, I just want to build another little connection, which is, can you play artifact lands from the graveyard with Emry? You can't. It's just casting. Okay, but I'm thinking about those artifact lands and maybe even snow lands, other kinds of lands that you could discard which have other synergy with things that you might have in your deck.
Emry comes up in this conversation too. Emry also works great with all the baubles and spell bombs. Aether's Spell Bomb, Mishra's Bauble, both work great with Emry and Temeshi. So now we have like a kind of graveyard matters, cheap little trinkety artifacts and enchantments matters thing going on. The other two cards that I thought of with Temeshi were Spirited Companion, which is just a dinky little Elvish Visionary, but it happens to be an enchantment, so you can recur it with Temeshi. And Touch of Spirit Realm also occurred to me, too. This is that O-ring that has channel to flicker something, and the fact that you can channel it and then still also play the O-ring out of your graveyard with Temeshi is a really cool little interaction. And if we are having other channel lands going on, then there starts to be like a cohesive theme. Not that they're actually interactive at all, right? Like, it doesn't actually, there's no mechanical interaction between Igonjo, Seat of the Empire, and Touch of Spirit Realm, but in the context of a cube, you're trying to like somewhat focus on themes or limit complexity for your players. If you're going to have the channel lands, then I think the channel Touch of Spirit Realm is much more acceptable and appropriate in that context. Let's talk Baron now. Baron Slayer and Archmage, the first thing I thought of was just Ninjutsu. Ninjutsu is great because it returns a thing to your hand that you control, so you're going to draw a card with Baron. Ninjutsu is also great with Baron himself because he's a Manowar, and Manowars are great with Ninjutsu. So any ninjas like Ninja of the Deep Hours are great with Baron, Talarian, Archmage. And Ninjutsu is like a whole theme. You can just say, I like Ninjutsu cards, and you can go dump 50 cards in your cube if you like Ninjutsu as at least a sort of, there's a lot of spaghetti to throw at the wall if as soon as you unlock the Ninjutsu section of the pie. The next thing I thought of,
we're doing pie or we're doing spaghetti? I'm lost in the sauce here.
Too many food analogies. The next thing I thought of with Baron, which I should have thought of way earlier, was just the Ravnica Bounce Lands. The Ravnica Bounce Lands work with so much of the stuff we've already talked about. They also have a trade routes-like effect. They put a land back in your hand.
It always comes back to the Ravnica Bounce Lands.
I mean,
do you want to trigger landfall every turn? Yes, I do.
So the Ravnica Bounce Lands are a really interesting addition here, and they already work with a lot of stuff we've talked about. They work with all the channel lands. They work with all the spell lands. They are doing the same sort of thing that Trade Routes is doing, but in a way that you wouldn't necessarily think to put them in the same cube until you do this exercise and start going through these multiple orders of synergy. Here's where it all starts to come together beautifully, Anthony. Then I thought of Harmonic Prodigy.
Ooh.
One in a red for a 1/3 with prowess. Whenever an ability of a shaman or wizard you control triggers, that ability triggers an additional time.
So we need to make trade routes into a wizard.
No. Harmonic Prodigy just works really well with Baron, because Baron has two triggered abilities, and Baron is a wizard.
Then we get Naban, Dean of Iteration.
Hold on. Before we even do any of that, both Temeshi and Emery are wizards.
Cards too.
You can name cards. I'm just saying that both Emery and Temeshi are also wizards. So even without adding any further wizard synergy, we already have, you know what else is a wizard? Bone Miser's a wizard.
Oh.
So now we have like a Harmonic Prodigy Bone Miser potential combo deck that is like showing up here.
You get a Dark Ritual for every one of your lands?
Four black mana.
But you pay one for... Oh.
No, you don't pay one.
You pay one to discard to trade routes.
Oh, but yes.
You're
sure.
Right. You're right. I forget that Dark Ritual does cost one mana as well.
Dark Ritual
costs
a mana.
You get a Black Lotus for every... That's pretty good.
You get a Cabal Ritual with Threshold? That's five mana. It's hard to say.
Cabal... Sure.
So Harmonic Prodigy is another, like, we could go down that whole lane too. I didn't go down the Harmonic Prodigy avenue deeply, but you could go down the Naban thing.
There is a lot of support for wizards.
You mentioned Riel the Everwise already. She's a wizard, I assume, right?
She's probably a wizard.
She has to be a wizard.
Let's go over to tab number 23 here. She is, in fact, a human wizard.
Is there some wizard with landfall for the wizard landfall deck? Wait.
Back to the Scryfall Mines.
There are no wizards with landfall. Gavin Verhey, if you're listening to this, I need you to make a wizard with landfall for this cube we have not yet built.
Simply play the Maskwood Nexus. Problem solved.
And the last thing I thought of with Baron was just a class of card that I know you particularly love, which is Core Skyfisher effects and Core Skyfisher itself. This also is another way to have backup. I mean, Core Skyfisher specifically being able to pick up any permanent.
It's again, really good with all the channel lands and lands that do other stuff where you just need to curve out early game, but then you don't want to have your fifth land. You just want to turn those back into spells.
Yep. And Core Skyfisher especially, because it picked up anything, but, you know, your white main lions are, like, adjacent to this. And I'm a huge Core Skyfisher stan and a huge white main lion detractor, so, you know, that's my particular stance on this issue. Anthony's a more open arms accepting of all various Skyfisher variants. So that's second order synergies. And you could, again, keep doing this exercise with any cards we mentioned in that first order that you like, and just, you have more and more cards. You're looking for just raw material now to, like, build a big list of potential cards. You will consider curve, density of interaction, fixing, all that stuff you're going to get to later, but you're just dumping stuff on the big board. Then I noticed a kind of subtle emergent theme. There's some obvious emergent themes we talked about. Lands matter, discards matter, like landfall enchantments. Those are some very obvious major themes. But my brain got ticking over on a more interesting emergent theme, which is just tons of activated abilities. All the cards we've mentioned give you ways to use your mana productively without actually casting spells. And then I was like, we gotta play Standstill.
Okay, if you think that's a good idea.
I think Standstill's a fun card.
Uh-huh.
What do you have against Standstill?
No, nothing.
It's just a 2-mana draw 3. We already have that in Expressive Iteration.
Sure.
Anyway, Standstill is a really cool card in this context, and another card that
Somebody write in and explain to Andy why Standstill's not a fun Magic card.
I think people confuse it, honestly, with, like, Stasis. It doesn't stop you from playing the game. You just keep playing the game and say, good job, opponent.
Don't let the terrorists win.
It's fun. It's a fun card. The other card that fits directly with that Standstill theme, shout out to Bosh and Roll, is Shark Typhoon. Shark Typhoon, fantastic with Standstill prior to the printing of Expressive Iteration and the further, you know, power creep of Eternal formats. Bosh and Roll, Brian on the Bosh and Roll channel, used to play these Sharkstill decks, which were very cool Standstill decks that were built around Shark Typhoon and other cycling abilities where you could just continue your game plan under Standstill and basically force your opponent to pop it at some point.
But wait, I'm really confused, because in order to trigger Shark Typhoon, you need to cast spells.
Wow. Big if true. So that's just us kind of giving you an example of what we mean by following the first order synergies, second order synergies, and using that initial card as a, like, point of inspiration to just spread out from there. And so far we've named mostly blue cards, a lot of other red cards and white cards, very few green and black cards, but some. So, you know, we don't actually
I can name some green cards.
I mean, we said landfall, which is a shorthand for about 100 green cards, but you could do this exercise as much as you needed to have as much raw material as you need to work with until you felt like your cube was starting to come into view. But let's go to the next step. And again, we're getting...
Okay, wait, what's the next step?
So we're getting further and further from designing a deck and closer to designing a cube, because now we have to think about answers to our own deck.
Okay, wait, can we name some more, a few more cards first?
Absolutely. Pop off, King.
So, I mean, if you're playing land, if you're just able to trigger landfall as much as you want, another thing you could do is just play lands that do stuff when they enter the battlefield, which is not a ton, but we do have Bajuka Bog could be relevant, especially if we're doing a bunch of graveyard stuff. It's possible this cube could emerge in a direction where a graveyard really matters. And to your point, having interaction with the graveyard really matters.
I think Bajuka Bog is a much less fun card than Standstill.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Fair, okay. But you might be more excited about Mystic Sanctuary, just having a way to trade routes to be able to pick up Mystic Sanctuary every turn. I could see you being excited about that.
You probably accidentally just put a bunch of infinite combos in your cube if you add Mystic Sanctuary to your trade routes cube.
Yeah, put in an Eternal Witness and you're good to go. I actually just found that just searching for O land, O graveyard. So cards that just have both those words
graveyard.
And I started by EDH Rec on Scryfall because that does give you a bunch of cards, but stuff we've already mentioned like Excavator and Crucible of Worlds. But, you know, this also works with Deathrite Shaman or fills up your graveyard to Underworld Breach. I think in particular these two keywords just pull up a lot of stuff that could be relevant. The other card that I thought of, this is maybe a little bit of a bigger card than we're usually excited about for our cubes, but it might be good for you, the listener. Ashaya, Soul of the Wild, which turns all of your creatures into forests.
Guess who's never getting a creature removed ever again?
Yeah, you just pay one, which you can do with your creature because it now taps for mana and you can pick up that creature. And you mentioned, what's that little guy? The Spirited Companion. Just imagine you're picking up that land creature a million times and drawing as many cards as you want. Could be a great time.
The world is your oyster.
That's all I got.
So, let's go to the next step. And again, we're getting a little further from the feeling of designing a deck and a little more to the feeling of designing a cube, because now something you never do in deck building is include cards that answer your own deck. But
good
I think
point.
That's an important thing to do in the context of a cube. So, looking at cards now that answer either Trade Routes itself or the kinds of things that Trade Routes is doing, and specifically looking at things that not just answer it, but answer it in a way that is synergistic with the stuff we've already been talking about. So we already mentioned Seal of Cleansing, the white seal effect. That seems great in this context. Not only does it remove Trade Routes, but also it works with Temeshi and has a bunch of other interactions we've been talking about. Dispeller's Capsule is basically the artifact version of Seal of Cleansing, so that's really cool. Then we have to mention Lauren of the Third Path and Reclamation Sage, which are both Reclamation Sage variants. They both enter the battlefield and destroy an artifact or enchantment, which might not sound super synergistic, but we also talked about all the ninjutsu stuff with Baron and all the ways to pick up our own creatures, so ways to recur those. There's already some cool interactions and synergies building up there.
That's true.
Here's a really cool one for you. Kasali Pride Mage.
Oh, you know I'm happy about that.
Do you know why?
Because it's cool. It lets you destroy artifacts and enchantments.
It's a wizard, baby.
It's a wizard?
We're going to double trigger that Exalted when we attack with our Harmonic Prodigy in play. It's happening.
It's a cat wizard.
I went really deep in Scryfall and found an even cooler one. This is probably like well below the power level of the cards we've been talking about, but Thornscape Battle Mage is
okay.
An elf wizard.
Yes, please.
Is an elf wizard, 2 and a green for 2/2.
How many people could you have as a podcast co-host that are going to say, absolutely, Thornscape Battle Mage? I can tell you. Can I tell you the whole text on that?
Yeah,
I
go.
I did pull it up. I'm going to hide
Don't
it.
Don't look. I'm eyes here. Okay. My eyes are up here.
2 and a green for a 2/2.
Did you know it was an elf wizard before we had this conversation?
I would not have known it was an elf wizard.
It's an elf wizard,
but
I'll
it makes sense.
You.
It's a mage. It has kicker for white and kicker for 1 and a red.
Just red
just
and or
red.
White.
Okay, so if you pay, you can pay both of these kicker costs.
Yes.
If you kick it with white, you get to destroy an enchantment or an artifact. And if you kick it with red, you do 2 damage to any target.
White is just destroy target artifact.
And one of them gives it a counter. One of them gives it a counter. No,
nope,
I'm thinking
no
of a
counters.
Different Battle Mage cycle.
You really embarrassed yourself here. No
I'm
one asked you to do
Volver,
this from memory.
I'm thinking of the Volver cycle. I'm sorry.
You're very close.
Thank you.
The white kicker destroys target artifact on ETB, and
it
the red kicker
artifact.
Is 2 damage target creature or player.
Great.
This probably wouldn't work out in the cube with all the other cards we've been discussing, but just imagine this with Harmonic Prodigy, and you're blowing up 2 artifacts, and you're dealing 4 damage.
You could make it work.
It's potential. I mean, it's pretty bad as a base level. It's not great.
It's basically Flame Tongue Kavu.
Two other answers that occurred to me in this context were Tashana's Tidebinder and Phyrexian Revoker. Both answers for abilities. In the case of Revoker, just activated abilities. In the case of Tidebinder, both activated and triggered abilities. But ways to interact with these kind of abilities that are so prevalent in all the cards we've mentioned, but not totally dead cards on their own. Not your Pithing Needle or your Stifles or whatever. They actually just are creatures that do things on their own in a normal context. Plus, you can pick up your Phyrexian Revoker or your Tashana's Tidebinder with any of the ways we talked about picking up creatures and replay them to counter more stuff. So we started at Trade Routes. We ended at Kasali Pride Mage, Harmonic Prodigy, Standstill, and I think there is a very cogent through line to all of these cards that begins to form the architecture of a cube. Here's where I think we have to start thinking bigger picture now. And again, if you're doing this for yourself, I think you should do this with multiple starting cards. Just like pick a handful of cards you want to play and do this exercise with them. Come up with this sort of constellation of related cards. Start to see where overlap is. Or just keep doing this even deeper, right? Like go into second and third order synergies and just keep kind of following the trail of your interest as a player. Like what are the kinds of cards that also indicate the kinds of decks you'd want to play? Just keep following that thread.
I mean, there's also just a lot of sort of really obscure ways to think about synergies. And Trade Routes does a lot, so it's easy to find many directions, but any card will kind of have this.
Trade Routes is just the one thing.
But, you know, anything that cares about drawing two cards a turn, this will trigger. Anything that cares about enchantments, this has potential to interact with. Things that care about cards that cost two mana, potentially, you know, just things, environments that care about cheap effects. There's all kinds of little ways that you can make a card matter, even if it isn't specifically saying, whenever you do a land thing, do another thing.
Put Spell Snare in our answers list here.
Sure,
along with
yeah,
all
why
of
not?
These disenchants. So then, getting even broader, I think it's very natural to come up with a big list of cards like this, and I think if you do this exercise for almost any set of cards, you'll probably end up with a fairly synergistic, maybe somewhat like magical Christmas land pile of cards that are cool together, but that does not necessarily a fun cube make.
And okay, so you're saying Bone Miser, Trade Routes, Thassa's Oracle, that's magical Christmas land to you?
I mean, that's the kind of Christmas I want to live in. More I'm thinking like Harmonic Prodigy, Kasali Pride Mage, that combination might
sure.
be a little bit ambitious, and is it really worth going into a third color just to get double exalted? I mean, I don't know, maybe it could be cool.
But we can tune the
well,
environment
double exalted,
we
press the prowess. I mean, you cast one cantrip and you're beaten down. Anyway.
You got a stew going.
You got a stew going, baby. So I think you ultimately have to put this through a couple filters that are more broad universal questions to cube. And you'll eventually have to answer the question of like how much of this cube should be fixing. And we have a bunch of resources dedicated to that. Whole podcast episodes, whole articles we'll put in the show notes. You eventually should answer the question how much of this cube should be interaction, removal of various kinds. And we also have full episodes dedicated to that, which we'll link in the show notes. I think more important at this step is not densities of those things, but what do those things look like? So what does a suite of answers look like? We've talked about some of that already with the cards we mentioned. What does aggro look like? We had one idea that came up early, which was the sort of landfall step links aggro. We also talked about ninjutsu, which is not an aggro deck per se, but it's definitely a proactive deck that can start to establish the tempo of an environment. You can't just sit back and do a dirtily thing if you're getting ninjutsu'd every single turn. You have to be present on board. You have to have interaction to stop your opponent's plan. It's a strategy that sets the tempo of the environment.
Right. There are also some really interesting aggressive strategies in black and red. I could see in red things that care about spells in the graveyard. Obviously, we love to talk about Dreadhorde Arcanist, but that's a very real option here. Or a lot of these cheap black creatures that recur themselves from the graveyard. You discard your Grave Crawlers, your Bloodsoaked Champions, your Gutter Boneses, and bring them back from the graveyard. That can definitely start to form again, just as a similar sort of suite of overlapping kinds of mechanics and themes.
Right, we also just mentioned, like, Inti and Containment Construct. You could throw Conspiracy Theorist in there,
mm-hmm.
and you have a whole like madness aggro thing going on in red already, which is just cares about discarding a bunch of cards. Get your Anya's Ravager in there too, and just kind of go off. So,
and what's also I think very cool about that is we're talking about this sets of cards. Those are not all the same power level, and it might be fine to have that spread there. It also means you might have a little menu for yourself if you want to say, well, Trade Routes is not really working here, or this other sort of theme that I really was enjoying isn't quite working here. Let's go with Conspiracy Theorist over Inti, or maybe just the proactive decks need more juice, so sure, dial it up and put in the more powerful version.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have to answer the question, I think, of what does fixing look like? And from just looking at Trade Routes, I think we've arrived at a
That's
pretty...
all you need.
Just,
all you need is a basic
well, yeah, from just Trade Routes, I think we've arrived at a pretty comprehensive answer for what our fixing ought to look like. We touched on landfall, so I think this is an environment where I'd want to include fetch lands, for sure.
Okay.
I know you're a sometimes fetch land...
I mean, hey, if they're contributing to the environment, then... Yeah, shuffle your deck a bunch.
So I think fetch lands are appropriate here. We also talked about the Ravnica Balance Lands. So if we start with the cycle
yes,
of fetch
please.
Lands, the cycle of Ravnica Balance Lands, we want our fetch lands probably to be able to fix our mana in novel ways. So maybe think about, you know, shocks or whatever to make those work. Or even just the tapped dual lands, just typed duels of any kind, I think gives fetches a different kind of texture. We also talked about all of those utility lands that have various spell effects on them. There's no gold motor double face lands.
A lot
right?
of them, the only ones are the pathways, which again, with trade outs, you pick up a pathway, flip it over.
Now,
if that happens,
now we're
if
talking,
that happens
baby.
Once, you're like, oh, that was neat.
That was worth it. But yeah, starting to think about also all those, you know, cool lands. I mean, we didn't even talk about it, but just creature lands with trade routes is cool. Because you just have a creature you can put back in your hand and protect. Like, it's a cool
That's
way
true,
to save your creatures. Have you ever used your trade routes and your creature lands to blank all the lifelink triggers from your opponent's battle skull every combat?
Yeah.
Now you're living, baby. Now you're playing cube.
People have asked, why does Celestial...
Colonnade.
Why does... People always ask, why does Celestial Colonnade have vigilance? This is why.
So you can tap it to put it back in your hand with trade routes.
So your
routes.
Opponent's removal doesn't work.
Another kind of fixed land that could work here, even, is just the cycling lands, right?
Yeah, like definitely.
The cycling bicycle duels and the triumphs. Well, I mean, the triumphs do work here. As much as I don't like their design in a vacuum, they do fit here because we talked about including things that trigger when you discard lands. We talked about including things like Drakehaven, things like Tectonic Reformation. So cycling lands also work.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth pointing out again, just considering the starting point of trade routes, it doesn't really matter that they have cycling to work with trade routes because
right.
trade routes gives them cycling, but you're probably going to be including a lot of cards that will care about that in other ways, so they do have this potential for indirect synergy.
So yeah, this is the way that I recommend designing cubes for the most part, is starting with the cards you want to play, doing this exercise, and it's not that difficult to start at somewhere very specific like trade routes and end up at, well, here's an idea of what the aggro decks could be. Here's an idea of what my fixing could look like. Here's an idea of what my suite of answers could look like. And then you got a cube going, baby.
Yeah, and I think that the really cool thing is that, again, we have not built the trade routes cube. It was just an interesting entry point to explore whatever interested us. And again, at every kind of step where we expanded our search, we were just following whatever interested us. So that means that we're going to end up in a place where the whole thing is going to be cool to us.
Yeah, if you realize that things that trigger on discard work with trade routes, but you don't like madness, madness is not exciting to you as a cube designer, don't include it. You're not obligated to include things that are synergistic with the place you started. That's just merely a point of inspiration for you to work from to find stuff that does interest you and that does excite you. Maybe you're really into the landfall aspect and you're not into the discarding aspect. Maybe you don't like the whole Temeshi, Emry, baubles, and trinket enchantments direction. Just ignore that. There's no obligation to follow that path in any way. There's no obligation to play the powerful cards you think of. Just include the cards that follow the play patterns and the kind of games and decks you want to actually draft.
What do you think about Mudhole? Is this the cube for Mudhole?
Real quick, just looking up Mudhole again. Mud. This is one of those famously awful cards, right?
Yeah.
Mudhole. 2 and a red. Target player removes all land cards in his or her graveyard from the game. It's just like Bajuka Bog, but so much worse and no fun at all.
That's a really good summary.
It's rare, at least. Can you imagine if this was an uncommon or something? I'm sure there are people back during Odyssey Block that were just very mad to have opened Mudhole in their pack.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you think, Anthony? Do we miss anything? Is this a fairly good representation of this kind of approach to cube design that we have espoused before?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we miss things in terms of there are still so many cool cards we could talk about.
There's a lot.
But we've mostly tried not to have podcast episodes that are just us listing cards, and maybe we've been a little bit indulgent about that here, so that's fine.
I mean, to an end, right? Like, the reason we
avoid
that...
We do have to talk about cards eventually.
The reason we avoid that is just because it is hard to follow along if you don't know all the cards, and saying all the rules text is really slows things down for people that do know the rules text, so it's like it's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place in terms of how you handle saying a lot of cards on air. But I think this is, I hope, demonstrative of a way that you can engage with cube design that is much more approachable, much more fun, and much easier than saying, okay, you want to design a cube? First decide on a cube size. I hate that people say that first. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, that was honestly I think that was something that was mentioned in one of the Tolarian Community College videos, which I was like, I love everything about this video except that you started there, because I think that's the least important thing. Like, the most important thing to where should you start your cube is what is fun to you. The whole exercise is for you to have fun. You're probably not Justin Parnell building the cube for SCG Con 2021 or whatever it was.
If you're doing that, listen to a different episode.
Yeah, that's most of us are not in that position where we are doing it for external forces or have bigger obligations. We're here to have fun, so focus on what's fun. Unless you just love numbers and you're like, the first thing I want to do is pick a number.
Pick a number!
Pick a number!
Any number! Yeah, I disagreed with plenty of the ideas in the Tellarian Community College video, but overall I thought it was a fantastic introduction to cube design. It did not assume the context of cube is always vintage.
Absolutely.
Cube. It's always the most
that.
Powerful cards, and obviously it's a huge platform, so nothing but respect for the video, even though I would have done it differently if it were me, but there's a reason I'm not the professor. A lot of reasons, actually. So yeah, don't pick a size. Don't think about how many gold cards in each guild you're going to include. Don't look at all the 10 color combinations to start picking archetypes. Just start with the cards you like, and then find more cards you like that are cousins of the cards you like, and second cousins, and third cousins, and 10th cousins once removed of the cards you like. And what will inevitably happen, the greatest joy of cube design, I maintain, Anthony, is what will inevitably happen is you will put all these cards together, and then the first time you draft it, a couple players will combine these cards in ways you never foresaw that are following a different path through this web than you followed, right? Like, I went from trade routes to Baron to ninjas to Ravnica Bounce Lands or whatever. Somebody else will combine these things from different branches in ways that are still totally synergistic, because Magic is this beautiful game where everything does interact with everything else in these really awesome ways. And you'll just see people building decks that you didn't even know were possible. And you'll see people building decks that don't work. And you'll realize that some cards that you wanted to make work are just too expensive or they're too narrow. And you can start the editing process from there. But this is how you get, I think, from nothing or from I like a couple cards to a cube that you can actually start playtesting and start evaluating.
That's actually a huge, huge point, is set expectations for yourself as a cube designer, and don't expect that just because you went through this journey of following this very cool, complex, convoluted line of synergy that all of your players will sit down and see that same thing. Don't be upset when your players do not show up with the exact sort of complex suite of synergistic decks that you expected, and instead are just like, well, I played this card because it's a 3-mana 4/4. I played this card because it filled my curve well, and I just curved out and beat my opponent before they did anything cool with their enchantment deck. That's going to happen, and that's why you sort of have to keep your eye on what's fun for people, keep an eye on what's fun for you, and be willing and expect to iterate and move towards whatever is fun. It's like, it's literally not going to work the first time, but that doesn't mean it's a failure. That just means it was the first draft, and that's fine. Your players are still going to have a good time, almost certainly.
Yeah, and again, this is just not about how to, like, edit and maintain the cube, and there's a whole slew of episodes about that, too. This is purely about how to get to that first starting point. And like Anthony said, don't have expectations you will have it all figured out. Anthony and I have been designing cubes for 6-7 years. We basically do nothing but design and play cubes. We think about it all the time. It dominates all of our free energy.
I feel burned.
No, I mean, all of our time in Magic is basically spent thinking about cubes.
That's definitely true.
I don't mean in our whole life, generally speaking. I just mean like in our Magic life. We are not doing anything else. Sure. We're not grinding constructed or whatever. This is what we think about. And I absolutely could not look at a cube list based on some of these cards or other cards and know before drafting it what was going to work or what wasn't going to work. So you should not expect yourself to be able to balance all of this entirely in the first place either. When someone plays Slogurk in the Ninjutsu deck and picks it up and returns a bunch of lands to the battlefield, you should be thrilled and excited, and then you can afterwards look at that and say, like, all right, that was cool that someone did something I didn't expect. Do
maybe
I want
that
good, to happen?
Maybe it's bad. I'm looking at my cube and I'm trying to remember, what were the cards that I started with? Because this was absolutely...
Knight of the Reliquary
was one of them. And that was probably even... So I started with a big list of, these are cards I think are cool, which was probably 40 to 50 cards, and then trimmed that down. And yeah, I mean, it was sort of the sculptural process of add a bunch of cards based on what's interesting, what things go together, and then trim a cards based on all kinds of factors. Knight of the Reliquary was one. I'm sure White Mane Lion was one.
I was going to say that next.
I'm sure a lot, like I think Kess Dissident Mage might have been one. So
I think
a lot of
some
those
of them,
cut.
Yeah. I think some of them were cards that you're no longer playing.
Which
like,
I think
Rampaging Baelofts, I think, was one of the early ones, too. I remember
definitely.
You being really excited
Nesting
about playing.
Nesting Dragon. So yeah, I mean, that's maybe another
Nesting Dragon
point
is cracked.
Is,
that card is so good.
cards might end up being cut, but that doesn't mean that their temporary role wasn't important in shaping the environment. Something, something, Ship of Theseus.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's entirely possible you could do this exercise, listener, for a card you like, get to the end, cut that card you started with, and still be thrilled with the cube you end up with. Because you liked trade routes or whatever for a reason, and that reason will be embodied in the cards you picked that work with it, even if it turns out they work better with each other than they do with the original card you started with. So all roads lead to cube, and I think this is the most fun way to travel that path and leads to the most interesting and novel cube designs, because a lot of cool things you can do in a cube do not translate or are not articulated by things like two-color archetypes, right? this is how you're going to end up with a more novel, more unique, more special cube than trying to be the 190th person to say, I'm going to combine blue-white blink with...
red-green stompy.
With red-green stompy and green-white plus one counters and blue-white control.
I do love green-white plus one counters.
So this is the path, I think. What should we call this approach, Anthony? Let's try and come up with a name for this approach. I know you hate doing this. You hate any kind of, like, branding or...
I'm petting
the
dog now, so we're kind of at neutral.
What about emergent cube design?
You wanna burn emergent? That's a powerful word right there.
Why are we burning it? We're using it for good.
Every word gets one use.
We're using it for good.
Fine,
that's your answer.
Bye, dog.
Well, Anthony says fine. So on that bombshell, we'll end this episode of Lucky Paper Radio. Thank you for tuning in. There's a ton of links we mentioned in this show and a ton of cards mentioned in this episode, so make sure you check out the show notes wherever you are listening. Our website is the best place to view the cards mentioned and to click on the linked timestamps, though the timestamps are also going to be in the YouTube video. There'll be chapters below, and I think in Spotify on mobile there's also chapters, but not in some other places where you're listening. So check that out. Check out the cards mentioned page. And let us know if this is a cool episode idea and if it will be useful to go through this exercise with other cards, or if it would just be purely indulgent naming cards we like podcasts that are not actually that useful.
I'll be honest. When you started this, I was like, okay, how many cards are we going to do? 3, 4? It's just one.
Just the one this
just
time.
Just the one.
I mean, you can go really deep on just one card, and that's what I wanted to demonstrate.
Yeah, I think we could have spent 4 times as much on this one card.
We could have, easily.
Definitely.
I think this first episode was good as the only example of how to do this. We've talked about it before abstractly, but here's one example of like how to do this with a specific card. I think the first example is very useful. I don't know how useful further examples are, so let us know in the comments down below or write us at mail@luckypaper.co and let us know if this is cool. And with that, we're wrapping up this episode. All of our music is produced by DJ James Nasty. All the magic cards are produced by Wizards of the Coast. This podcast is produced by Anthony and I, thinking really hard about magic cards and then speaking into microphones about it. It's Wacky Draft Day, Anthony.
It's the best time of year.
It's the wackiest time of year.
The wackiest time of year. Yeah, this has been a fun tradition for as long as we've been playing Magic. Once a year, our local playgroup does a Chaos Draft, which is a draft where everybody brings 3 random booster packs, and it's a lot of fun. We even also just draft in one big pod, so the biggest we've had is like 50 people or something. Yeah.
It's very cool to never wheel a card, and also
You have more than 16 people, it doesn't, like, there's no functional difference to it being one big pod, but it's just sort of fun for the holidays to do something a little weird and wacky. I did pretty well the last 2 years.
I literally have no memory of how I did it. I know that we didn't do it over COVID, which was obvious.
But I think we've done it the previous 2 years. Does that sound plausible?
No idea. The last one I remember was the really big pre-COVID one. That was the biggest year, 2019, okay. Over the holidays. Mm-hmm. It was the first year at the new Nolan Beyond location. That's where we had like 45
okay, maybe
or 50
those
people.
Are, maybe those are the two I'm thinking of as last year. And
that one, I remember I specifically had more or less in my like blue-green deck, and I found so many cool ways to use more or less that uncard that lets
that
you change
like
a number by one.
Magical hack type?
Yeah, lets you move in. Well, magical hack is switch a plus or a minus.
Magical hacker.
It's magical hack is the name of the card.
I'm thinking of magical hacker.
What's that?
That's the creature that lets you.
No, it's magical hack.
Magical hacker is also different cards.
There's two cards?
Different cards mean different
what
cards.
What the heck is magical hacker?
He's the creature that lets you add or remove numbers or switch the sign of numbers.
Why I think that was magical hack?
Magical hack is, I think, just changes the colors of something.
Oh, magical hack is a black border card.
Yeah.
You know, anyway.
Okay, I'm glad we clarified
this. I remember doing a bunch of cool stuff with more or less and popping off with it a couple times.
I remember one of them I had Urza, the blue 4-mana Urza. I also had Lyra Dawnbringer.
Jeez.
And then like some other huge green bomb. And I also had an uncard that was a rampant growth, but if I sang a song, it was untapped. And that was difficult for me personally. But once a year, I will sing a song for my untapped rampant growth.
For the spirit of the wacky draft, I am happy to let people bring whatever they want, but I would also be very happy if there were never any unpacks brought to this stupid draft.
I want some unpacks.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a good time.
You got spicy packs?
Nah, not that spicy.
Okay.
I mean, in past years, I have gone real spicy. Years and years ago, I'm not. What is a what is a sealed Urza Saga pack worth now? I did buy one at the time, and I think at the time it was like $40, and sure. It felt really irresponsible.
And then you open it. Yeah, I had an Odyssey pack last year that was given as a gift to me, and I can't remember what I thought. I opened up literally nothing that was applicable, but it's cool to see a bunch of old bad cards. $120 is my guess.
Market price is currently $225 for a sealed Urza Saga booster pack.
The irresponsible thing was opening that pack.
The one I opened had a wildfire in it, so a lot of value.
Cool. Did you draft it?
I did. That was actually a really cool deck. I drafted Wildfire and Souls of the Field of the Soul. There's some card that says whenever a creature you control dies, you make a spirit token. And I basically drafted a weird like combo deck that was all about building up a big board and then wiping it away and then being left with a bunch of spirits and beating my opponent. It was cool.
Cool.